When the Apostle Paul gathered a group of new Christian followers, he held high hopes that they would embody Jesus' teachings of selfless love, moral purity, and human harmony. In reality, the Corinthians blew it, big time. Paul responded with a corrective plan to help God's people experience life together as God intended. Come join us as we study Paul's timeless instructions for living, loving, and working as a team to realize change in ourselves and our community in a series called Life Together.
Matt, cut two things before we jump in. One, it is Palm Sunday, and some of you have been around the church for a long time, and so you know what that means. Others, you're newer to church, you're newer to Northgate, and I always love that, because people are like, what are these for? And my answer is just not to hit each other. Like, that's really, just don't hit each other with those. Some people are really skilled, they can fold them into crosses. But those are palms. So, you know, if you read through in the New Testament, you see Jesus' triumphal entry, where he came into Jerusalem, and they honored him. They thought he was there to take over as the king. They had a different picture of what the Messiah actually would be, and they welcomed him as a king, and they welcomed him with the palms, and they, you know, threw their clothes, their cloaks down in front of him, and it was kind of this big, really awesome parade, and that's what starts Holy Week. That is what today is. Palm Sunday means it's 1 week until Easter, in case you forgot that. That's just one small reason why we felt so unworthy of the welcoming that they gave us in Gahanda, is because they're all standing there waving palms and stuff, and we're like, no, that's somebody else. Like, thank you. Put those away. That's not for us. So feel free to grab a palm, as long as you cannot hit people with it. If somebody does fall asleep, I do give you permission to just either like stick it in their ear a little bit, something like that. Number two is that Chris Landon, who is one of our pastors at Arbor House, does a wonderful job there. He is also the director of Covenant Acres, which is a local Free Methodist camp, and he is out in the lobby today. He's got a table set up over there. So if you have kids grades 6 through 12, you want to stop and connect with him, talk about what you're going to do to get them out of your house for the summer, because it's long, right? Hey, we love the kids, but man, summer's long. I'm like, we got to get you guys programmed somewhere. We got to get you out of here. So that'd be a great way to do it. Particularly look at Adventure Camp, August 2nd to the 4th. That would be a really good one. But stop by and say hi to Chris and see what's going on there. Okay. We're in a series called Life Together. We've been talking about what it means to be the church, trying to remind us or maybe inform us of what the purpose of all of this is. Is this just something for you to do on Sunday so you can feel good about yourself? What is this for? And today's message is about us being bound together by love. And this is an absolutely critical, crucial message in this process of what the church is actually about. I don't want to call it the most important message in the series, but it's definitely the most important one this weekend in this series. Because sometimes in life, being close is good enough. Sometimes you're close and you're like, all right, that's good enough. I remember taking my road test, and they've since closed some of these loopholes, and it's probably because of me, because I turned 16 on a Sunday. I actually went to a NASCAR race with my dad, which is like a really good way to turn 16 for like your car birthday. Monday morning, as soon as the DMV opened, I was there, I applied, I got my permit. And then Monday night, I went and I took the five-hour course that night, which was all that was required. You didn't have to have driver's ed. You didn't have to have a certain amount of time. So then Tuesday morning, I went back and signed up for my road test, which was great. So I got my road test 2 weeks later. I had my permit for 2 weeks. So I'm in the car taking the road test, and it goes through, and, you know, you get done, and you're just like, just get to the point, right? Was I close enough? Did I pass? Am I a driver? Am I not a driver? That's really all that matters. And he's like, well, you know, there's a few things. And I was like, just skip it. Was I close enough, right? Is it good enough? And he mentioned some things that he felt I did wrong, agree to disagree. But he gets there, and he's like, and I am going to be able to pass you based on your performance day. And all I cared about was like, close enough, good enough, I've got my license. And that was probably not the best thing. The problem, if you have a boy in particular, passing that test proves you have the ability to drive. It does not prove you have the maturity to drive. Those are two totally separate things. I needed like another 10 years and to be paying for my own car and insurance before I really got that second part. Yeah, so there's times where close enough is good enough, but then there's other times in life where there is a main thing, and if you miss the main thing, you miss the whole thing. If you don't get this one central part, this core idea, this one basic part, then everything else is just for naught. My first speech in my public speaking class in Roberts always reminds me of this, because I took the teacher that was known to be harder. There was two. One, if you take it with her, you'll get an A. You may or may not become a better public speaker. But this other guy, if you take it with him, you're going to probably get a B at best, but he will help you become a better public speaker. And so I took it with him because I wasn't scared. And so I remember our first speech. It was a minute and 30 seconds to 2 minutes. Very clear parameters. And you had to have a timer. It was your most embarrassing moment. Now, some of you are hoping that I will share that, and I will not. I can tell you my wife's most embarrassing moment, though. It's about 4 minutes old. So I'm doing the speech. And Joe Rebsey, a friend of mine that a bunch of you know, he was my timer. So you're supposed to give a sign at like 1:30, and then another sign, and then you can't go over 2 minutes. So I'm giving the speech and feel like things are going well, and all of a sudden I see him going, like waving it all, like frantically waving. So I wrap it up and I stop, and I was like, what happened? He's like, I was really into it, man. That was a good story. I was like, okay, well, I hope I didn't go over 2 minutes. So I get the evaluation back, and it says like, content, good, delivery, good, time management, fail. Overall speech, fail. And it said, the point of a speech is to stay within the parameters given. If you fail to do that, you fail the speech. And you guys wonder why I'm so committed to getting you out by 10:30, right? He came one time here to hear me speak, and I was like, oh no. Like looking to see if he had like a form to evaluate me. But he said, there is a main point, and you missed the main point. Because you missed that, you missed the whole thing, and I failed. I got to tell you, just that one speech, I ended up passing the class, but I got like a B because of that, so it's all right. Now I public speak all the time, so I'm trying to get better. I want to tell you my biggest fear about Northgate. Most of my biggest fears involve my daughters, but my biggest fear about Northgate is this. I fear that you will come here, either somebody will invite you here, maybe you'll drive by and you think it looks like a good place, maybe you're just searching and you go online and you see a church in Batavia, and that you'll come here. And that when you come here, you'll find a sense of community, that you'll find people that you can become friends with, you'll start to spend time with them, maybe you'll get invested in their lives, they'll get invested in yours, some of you will reach out and become a part of a small group, and maybe you'll find a place to serve, you'll find a place where you can connect in a meaningful way, and you can serve the church, and you'll enjoy doing that. Maybe you'll find some opportunities for generosity, sponsoring children from Gahanda, just being a part of some of the things we do, and that will fill your heart, because it feels good to be generous. You'll come here into the service and you might let us speak into your marriage. Maybe your marriage will be improved because you've listened to some truths from Scripture. You might learn to forgive somebody you haven't otherwise forgiven. You might even let us speak into your finances to help you see your finances through a biblical lens. And you'll have all that. Maybe you'll even start to invite other people to come and find what you've found here. And some of you are saying, well, why is that a fear? My fear is that you will come and you will do all of those things and you will miss the main thing. That because of all the other things that are going on, because of all those other good things that can fill your heart in a certain way, that you will miss the point that this was all about the love of Jesus Christ. That you will find everything else that we do and you'll find all the other good stuff that we offer and you will find that and you will think that that is the thing. None of those things are the thing. We are not in the self-help business. We are not here to give you inspiring words that hopefully go out and teach you to just dig deeper and do better this week. We're not in the business of trying to make you feel comfortable or make you feel good. We are in the business of Jesus's love and grace and forgiveness. That is what we have. That is what this all is based on. That is the point. And that's my main point for us this morning to remember, is that what you are, what you do, and what you give only matters when it is backed by love. It only matters if it's backed by love, and we'll talk more about that because we live in this era of kind of buffet Christianity where people want to go through and they just want to pick out the parts of Jesus and the parts of the Bible and the parts of God that they want. I remember when I was a kid, one of my favorite movies, still one of my favorite movies, was the movie Braveheart. And I remember being a kid and coming into the living room and seeing my sister watching the movie Braveheart, and she was fast-forwarding through the battle scenes. And if you ever watch Braveheart, it's like a 3-hour movie, and like 2.5 of that is just people slaughtering each other in a field, which some of you will never watch it because of that description. The other half an hour is this love story. And my sister was like, I just like the love story. I don't like all the fighting. I was like, you can't take the fighting out of Braveheart. You can't just pick and choose the parts that you want. But we do that sometimes where I've heard people say, like, I don't like angry Old Testament God, or I don't like when Jesus talks about my money, or I'm going to take a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and I'm going to put it all together. And well, first of all, that's not how it works. Jesus asked to be Lord over our entire lives, not just one small part of our portfolio of what we do. But I want you to know that if you skip over the whole thing about the love of Jesus filling you and the love of Jesus changing you and the love of Jesus impacting everything that you do part, if you walk by that part of the buffet, then you've missed the meal. And that's exactly what Paul is talking about in our passage today. It's exactly what he turns to in 1 Corinthians 13. Now, a few weeks ago, I joked with you that no one's ever asked me to use 1 Corinthians 7:28 in their wedding. It says, but those who marry will have a lot of trouble, and I want to protect you from this. No one's ever asked me that. A lot of people have asked me to use 1 Corinthians 13 because it's known as the love chapter. I want to let you in on a little secret, and if you use this in your wedding, don't be offended, but it's not actually like a wedding love kind of chapter. It's not about romantic love, about marriage love. Paul's talking about the kind of love that we can find here, that we can find in a church, the love that we receive from Jesus, and then the love that should, as a result of that, flow from us. And he builds this in a really interesting way. He starts when he's talking about the importance of love in a community of faith by talking about what it looks like without that love. And so I gave the first section the title, The Absence of Love. What does it look like without love? And this is what he says in verses 1 through 3. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to the hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Paul says very clearly that everything that we do has to be a byproduct of the love that we have received from Jesus. Everything that we do here at Northgate, whether you realize it or not, we work hard to make sure that it is a byproduct of that love. Northgate is never the main focus. Our mission, if you've seen it, if you're familiar with it, it's to bring people to Jesus Christ, to build them up in that relationship, and then to send them out to share his love. Notice very clearly that our mission is not expressly to bring people to Northgate. Now, we happen to believe, and many of us are giving our lives to trying to make sure that this is a great place to encounter Jesus, that this is a place you can do that in a way where you feel comfortable and where you can be exposed to Jesus in a new way. But our mission is not to see how big of a church that we can grow. I do think that healthy things grow and that when people are meeting Jesus, your church will grow as a natural result of that, but that will never be our mission. Our mission is based on helping people encounter his life-changing love and his life-changing forgiveness that Jesus Christ offers to each and every one of us. That is our mission. Everything else that flows from that is a byproduct, and that's what Paul is saying here. So let me ask you, have you found the love and forgiveness that Jesus offers each of us? Have you found that? Maybe you've come here and you found some of the other things that we do, and those are great things. A lot of my job is to try and encourage you to do those things. I think those things are wonderful. But if you're not living out of the overflow of the love of Jesus Christ, if you're just trying harder to be a better person, I want you to know you've missed the whole thing. You have missed the whole point. Paul could have said in a more modern context for us, if I attend worship every week and I sing really loud, if I sponsor a child from Gahanda, if I serve in Bible track every week, if I faithfully give my tithe and I give more when they're asking for special things, but I do not have love, then none of it mattered. None of it mattered. I want you to do all those things. I believe that doing those things, that connecting in those ways, that serving and giving and being generous, I believe those will unlock some really awesome things in your life as God seeks to use you to your full potential. But I want you to do all of those things for the right reason. I want you to do all of those things with the right motive, because otherwise it is all just noise. It's the absence of love. So after describing what it looks like without love, Paul moves on to give us this really poetic, beautiful description of what love is. And I called this one the essence of love. And Lucas said he thought that sounded like a really good R&B song. So if you want to use that, if you're an R&B writer and you're here today, feel free to use that. Write a song. We don't need any royalties. We're just happy to help you out. But the essence of love in verses 4 to 7, here's what he tells us. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. One time I was at a wedding and a guy read that and he said, love always preserves. And I was the only one that laughed out loud. And I always have to think about it whenever I'm reading this, right? Salt preserves, love perseveres. It's a very important difference that Paul wants us to make sure we get. So I want to ask the question from this, because it's important if we're going to talk about love. We talk about what is love. And if you want to know if we'd be friends, if you just sang, baby, don't hurt me no more, it's us, it's you and me. We're friends. Love is a couple of things that we can focus on. One, love is focused on others. Love is focused on others. That passage says that love does not dishonor people. As loving people, as people filled with the love of Christ, we need to be people that are constantly honoring other people and how we treat them and how we talk to them and how we talk about them. We need to be people that show honor. I think this is really important. This is becoming increasingly a place where we can set ourselves apart from the rest of the world because we don't live in a culture that shows a lot of honor to people. So we can show honor. We were shown so much honor in Gahanda to the point that we were like uncomfortable with how they honored us. I would have this thing, like we'd have suitcases and stuff, and I'd get one out of the car because I would hold it, and I knew less than 5 seconds, maybe 3 seconds, someone would come and take this suitcase from me and just hold it for me. Just be like, where are we walking? You want to go here? I'll carry the suitcase. And that was that kind of honor. These were people that have very, very little and were spending their money to make meat and food and to give us bottled water out of truthfully money that they did not have so that they could show us this honor. And we were incredibly honored and we felt incredibly loved because part of loving someone and part of being full of love is honoring people well. It also says in there, as a part of love being focused on others, that if it's love is not self-seeking. If something is self-seeking, if someone is self-seeking, that's not loving. If I'm only in something for what I can get out of it, then there's no way I can convince myself that that is love. I want free advice here, number one, for young people or people that are in a dating era of your life. If you're in a dating relationship with someone who is self-seeking, if you're in a dating relationship with someone who is only in it for what you can do for them, I would encourage you to run far and run fast. Don't look back. Don't take your stuff. Just go. Get out of there. That is not going to get better. Like, oh yeah, they're really self-seeking. But once we're married and sharing bills and kids and a house and all that, then I'm sure it'll get better. Won't get better. Run far and run fast. And if that's you, if you're the self-seeking one in a relationship, just let them go. Trust me, it's for the best. You will learn. You will do better. So love is focused on others. Number two, what is love? Demonstrated by action. This is really important. Love has to be tied to an action. There has to be something that shows our love. We have to understand that love is a verb. Love is not a noun. Andy Stanley, one of my very favorite pastors, he's talked so much about this. And if you are terrible with like parts of grammar, you're like, wait, verb, noun, person, place, or thing. You're going through that. That means love as a verb, it's a thing we do. It's an action. It's not just this feeling. It's not this thing that we just put out there and say, oh, love, like this vague thing. No, love is tied to an action because Andy will say that we tend to think of love as something that you fall into like a swimming pool or you fall out of like a chair. You know, like, oh, I fell in love. No, you fell in love because you had actions attached to your love. And if there isn't an action attached to your love, it's not love. If there's not something that you say, oh, honey, I love you, but nothing in your life shows that you love them, that is not love. It's just a word. I think the worst, truthfully, the worst love song ever written is You Were Always On My Mind. Like, if you're a big Willie Nelson fan, I apologize. I like Willie. This song is trash because it is, and I will tell you how I really feel. But a love song that says, maybe I didn't love you quite as often as I could have, and maybe I didn't treat you quite as good as I should have. If I made you feel second best, girl, I'm sorry I was blind, but you were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. If you hear that and you identify with it, you're like, yeah, that song really strikes a chord with me. Stop. Start doing better. Start attaching action to your love. Don't say like, oh yeah, you know, I never really told my wife or my kids or my girlfriend. I never really did anything to show Jesus that I loved him, but oh man, they were always on my mind. Like, no, that's horrible, and we need to stop. That's true of your relationship with Jesus. That's true of your marriage. If you're married, if you have kids, that's true. Love has to be attached to action for it to really be love. I hope I wasn't unclear. All right, third thing. Love is consistently given. Love has to be consistently given. Feelings come and feelings go and feelings will wane and they'll ebb and flow. But commitment, true committed love, on the other hand, is something that remains. And so if love is not consistently given, if love is conditional, if it's tied to a certain action or a certain behavior that says, well, I love you if this, or I will offer my love to you in exchange for this, that is not love. And here's free advice number two for young people, and write this one down, because when some dirtball guy that you're dating tries to tell you you need to do something you shouldn't do to show that you love him, you can say, and he'll love these words, actually my pastor said, which is like the last thing he wants to hear at that moment, my pastor said that if love is attached to a certain kind of behavior that it's not love. Just tell him that, write that down. But that is because love is consistently given. It can't be something that is tied conditionally. And that's one of the things we've tried so hard to help our girls to understand, that we love you always and forever, no matter what. We don't love you more on the days when you're better behaved. We don't love you more when you do really well in school. We love you consistently. That love is consistently given regardless of what you do, and that will always be there. And that love, that's not something we invented for our kids. That's God's love for us. And that's how he asks us to love as well. So then Paul moves on from describing love, from giving us this essence of love, to saying that love is persistent and that love will endure. Look at the persistence of love in verses 8 through 11. He tells us love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. Love is one of those very rare things that will outlive us. There's not many things that do that, but love is one of those things. If you have memories of a wonderful grandparent, you may or may not remember some of the words that they said to you, but I promise you that you remember the love that they showed you. You remember that feeling. You remember being with them, the time spent, and the love that was there, and that is because love will endure. Love will outlast good things, and love will outlast bad things. Which is great. Love will outlast our failures. It will outlast our faults. It will outlast our shortcomings. But love will also outlast things like Northgate. Love will still stand after Northgate doesn't, because there's this whole great eternal future of love in heaven. For those that don't miss out on that whole main thing about Jesus' love filling you and transforming you, there's this beautiful future of love in heaven. And when we are there, the money that we made won't matter. The degrees that we earned won't matter. How nice our house and our car was, those things will not matter. What will matter is the love that we have received and the love that we have given, because love will endure. And Paul paints this beautiful picture of it in those verses. And then he goes even farther to tell us the future of love in the last two verses. And here's the picture that he paints for this. He says, for now, on earth, we only see a reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And then he finishes with these famous words, and now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Paul says that the future of love is never ending. I mean, think about this. This is really cool. I'd never truthfully really thought about this. Faith and hope, they will be fulfilled in eternity. That's why love is the greatest of those things, because once you are in heaven, there's no longer any need or reason for faith and hope. Their purposes will have been completely fulfilled when you are in the presence of God. But love, on the other hand, love even then will continue. Love will be everlasting. Heaven will be this place of expression of this perfect love for God and God's love for us and our love for each other. So even after faith and hope have pushed off to the wayside, love will still have this prominent central place in our lives. And that is what God wants to prepare us for right now. That is his goal, is to prepare us for that future of love. I love the line, in a way in a manger, and I talked about it so much, but it really encapsulates what God is trying to do in our lives if you are a Christ follower right now, where it says, to fit us for heaven to live with you there. He's saying, well, they're coming to this place of enduring perfect love. I need to better prepare them to be loving people now. He's trying to fill us with love so much that it doesn't just become something that we do, but love becomes who we are. Becomes the essence of who we are. Dallas Willard, in his book, Life Without Lack, he said, love is not something you choose to do. It is what you become, a loving person. That's God's goal for us, to become a loving person. God desires to love you so well for you to understand how much he loves you to such a deep degree that you become a loving person and that it impacts every corner of your life. Because what you are and what you do and what you give only matters when it is backed by love. On our last day in Rwanda, we had breakfast with Bishop Samuel, who is the Free Methodist bishop in Rwanda, and he was a great man. I really enjoyed our time with him, but really stuck out to me about that breakfast is when John, who is the cook there where we were staying, he put down a bottle of real Vermont maple syrup on the other side of the world, and he puts down real maple syrup with pancakes, which you know it's going to be a good day if you're starting with real maple syrup and pancakes. And I love maple syrup. I talked about grandparents earlier. One of my memories of my grandparents, they made maple syrup in Maine. And so you have these breakfasts with pancakes and the real maple syrup. And I remember my grandma always wanting us not to waste it. Don't waste it, because you know maple syrup is a lot of work, right? It's a lot of work. I asked somebody at Northgate that makes maple syrup, and they said, I need about 40 gallons of sap to boil it down to 1 gallon of syrup. So you can understand why my grandmother, first of all, grandmas never want to waste anything, but why she didn't want us wasting that syrup. When I think about the process of boiling down from 40 gallons down to one, I think about how the Bible is constructed. Because if you're familiar with the Old Testament, it is a book, it is several books, and a lot of those are just laws and rules and regulations. I was just talking to someone a little bit ago, and they started reading through the Bible this year, and like a lot of us have done, they're like, yeah, Genesis, that's awesome, man, that's so cool, I love it, Joseph, what a great story, Exodus, you get in there, it's a good adventure, and then it's like, right? You get like Genesis, Exodus, and you're like, oh man, Leviticus and Deuteronomy and Numbers, like, this is going to be hard. And because it's these rules, and a lot of them don't really apply to us now, and it's really dry and it's hard to read, there's 613 Old Testament laws that the people of God were expected to keep up with. And if you've read your Old Testament, you know it didn't really go that well, right? They failed to do that quite often because it was too much to keep up with. So then Jesus comes through, and he takes those 613 laws, and he boils it down to get the good stuff, right? He boils it down like maple syrup. He's like, all right, we got all these things. This isn't working. He's like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take it down. We're going to condense it down to this. There's some teachers of the law in Matthew 22. They're trying to get him to kind of step in some things, trying to get him to say some things he doesn't really mean. They said, what's the greatest commandment? And Jesus is like, cool, the greatest commandment? I'll tell you what it is. He said, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And they're like, okay, good. And then he's like, and also, the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus takes these 613 laws, all this stuff, these things that people have been trying, they were experts in this law, and he says, if you want to do this, if you want to be a holy person, you want to live close with God, and love your neighbor as yourself. He boils it way down. He gets just the good stuff out of it, right? He gets just the real pure maple syrup. But then Paul comes along behind him in Galatians 5:6, and he condenses those two sentences down into one to give us this crystal clear mission of what our job is as Christ followers and as the church. And in Galatians 5:6, the second part of that verse, he said, the only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. Paul takes 613 commandments in the Old Testament, and he boils it down, and he says, if you want to be a serious-minded Christ follower, the only thing that matters is faith expressing itself through love. He said, it's the love of Jesus Christ taking over your life and filling you so full that it surrounds you, filling you so full that it impacts your actions, that it impacts your words, that eventually, yes, even it impacts your thoughts, right down to the very core and the very essence of who you are as a human being. Sometimes people will ask us, it's one of those things people ask pastors, like, I just want to know what God's will is for my life. And if that's you, I'm not mocking you. I want you to know that God's plan for you is exactly that, is to fill you with his love to such a degree that it changes the very essence of who you are. That is God's will for your life. That is God's will for my life individually. That is God's will for us, Northgate, as a church. Because the only thing that counts, the only thing is faith expressing itself through love. Let's pray.
Thanks for joining us on the Northgate Podcast. We hope this message has been a blessing to you as you walk with Jesus Christ. For more resources, visit our website at northgatefmc.com or download the Northgate app. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next time.